This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest, Match Review Podcast, www.backofthenest.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Show. I'm Chris Hambling and I am your slightly croaky host for the show as we look back at a hugely satisfying win against South Coast Minnows Brighton. I'll introduce my panel in just a moment.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp 0203 575 1266.
Anyway, I am joined by three people today, which is good because I'm not sure how long my voice is going to last. And the first of those is Mike Scott. Hello, Mike.
Hello, how are you doing?
Doesn't you know sound how that I great. Am. Yeah. Oh, dear. It was an interesting experience yesterday. Went to Brighton. You were with me, as was... Let's get the intros out of the way before we get into that, actually. Another person who was with us was Mr. DR Kerners. Hello, DR.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. You sneaked off home and don't have a hangover because you don't drink, which is unacceptable. But, you know, we'll get into talking about our day fairly shortly. And Cy Pizzi's with us as well. You didn't come with us, obviously. So you probably sound a little bit brighter and more cheerful.
I'm a little bit brighter and more cheerful. I feel like Jairo Rudeveld. I haven't been around for a while and I've been on 2 weeks in a row. So I'm back in.
There you go. And you've also got the same haircut as well, haven't you? Which is nice.
yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, because, you know, obviously we all experienced the game at the Amex and everything that goes along with that. How was it watching at home?
It was good to watch at home. Nerve-wracking. I hate watching it on TV, to be honest. I much prefer being there. But having to listen, the worst bit was having to listen to Martin Keown for 90 minutes to 100 minutes. His awful... what appeared to me biased commentary was annoying. But other than that, it was good to watch.
Yeah, Terence was saying he watched the recording. I haven't got BT Sports, so I didn't record it, haven't seen it back. So I haven't experienced the joy of Martin Keown, but I've heard he was problematic, to say the very least. Mike, DR, so obviously we're going to talk a little bit later on about some of the incidents and things that happened around our trip and also general things that happened during the course of the game as our kind of final topic of the show, I believe. But let's tease it a little bit, you know. Mike, what are you going to be, some of your highlights, do you think?
I'll give you my low light first. So knowing, because I only spend about half my time up in South London. I live down on the coast these days because it's cheap. But there was a rail replacement bus service. So I did the right thing, left a bit earlier than everyone else, sort of about 10:30. Got on the train, drifted off, just as we were pulling out of Brighton. And some hour and a half later, I woke up to find that we were just coming back into Brighton again. So that was great. And the guard was like, haven't I seen you before? He's like, you've fallen asleep, haven't you? Like, yeah. Where do you need to go? Hastings. I think you've missed the last bus. I was like, fuck. But he was, in fact, just winding me up. So I did manage to get home at about 2:30 in the morning.
That is incredible. And news to me, so that's just spectacular work. DR, you know, you didn't get the joy of what went on after the game because you scarpered off pretty quickly. But, you know, I will say your celebrations at a particular moment, you got a little excited, didn't you?
I'm just laughing at your voice because you actually sound mature. But, but yeah, yeah, the celebrations were brilliant. It was my first actual Brighton away game. Thankfully, managed to get into the ground after getting checked around 4 to 5 times, which was a bit over the top. I mean, what can I sneak in 2 seconds after checking me? But the whole experience was great. The only thing, I'll be real with you, the only thing that was a bit disappointing at the ground, but apparently this happens often, is the atmosphere wasn't quite at it. I mean, at the start, I think as the game went on, it did improve. But the fact that we were playing Brighton away, and I've been to many away games, and it just didn't feel like the special occasion in the stands. I mean, pre-game, it was brilliant, but just during the game, it just felt so weird. I mean, Brighton lot, they're awful anyways. But us lot, I just expected a bit better. But, I mean, that was perks of the game. But after we scored a goal, that's from then on, it was just absolutely brilliant. But before that, I mean, we could have done a bit better, but it was a great day out.
Yeah, actually, I was going to talk about it later. We might as well talk about it now since you bring it up. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I can remember the 3-1 the first time we played there and beat them. You know, especially when we went 1-0 down. Everyone was just too tense. Before the game, loud as you like, all sorts going on at the Wetherspoons in West Street. It was just, you know, absolute carnage before the game. And the carnage later on was incredible, but only after the tension got broken by a couple, you know, well, the first goal, the equaliser. And then as we went on to win, it was just absolutely incredible. It's just, you do get that. The tension just gets to people. And, you know, we were obviously singing along, which is why my voice is quite this bad. Although I think it was mainly the screaming during the goal that probably did for me. But you just do that. I can remember we just, that 3-1, we were sort of shouting for people to sing up. We couldn't understand why even the most basic of songs where everyone knows the words, and people who clearly must have, you know, a strong, you know, record of following Palace home and away to get tickets for that game. But they just, I think the tension's just too much.
The sound from the TV though was awesome. You know, especially about 30 minutes in onwards. And in fact, Peter Crouch, one of the BT pundits, was in the middle of like the Brighton and us. And he said, obviously after we scored, he actually referenced how good the fans were and sort of made a joke about us giving it to the Brighton fans for at least 20 to 30 minutes in the second half, which was quite good to hear.
It's weird, but this game, I actually did want Zaha to start a fight. Normally, I'm like, come on, Wilf, don't do that, don't do that. But not only Wilf, but just everyone else. Because I just feel like on the pitch, we saw it after the crying thing that Brighton sub did, which was just outrageous, and because he's a substitute and he's talking big to a player who's on the pitch. But after that happened, you could see the crowd start getting into it. And I feel like small things like that could up the crowd. And that's why the atmosphere did improve as the game went on, but we got a result, so who cares?
They're absolutely right. You do need that spark on the pitch, and it doesn't have to be a goal. It can be a, you know, rough tackle. And let's face it, Dio, every 4 or 5 seconds, you were shouting at someone to put a challenge in or break someone's legs. So there you go. Anyway, let's wrap up the usual admin. So first up, shout out for our sponsors, Pitch Sport Football. Download their app, just Google them, jump on the website, download their app and sort of join the fun with us. We're all on there. Use it to predict teams, suggest lineups, predict results. And there's obviously, DR, you do a video question and replies on there as well.
Yeah, I do. But this week, as I was ill, you saw it at the game. I was ill as well, just coughing up the place. I couldn't actually record a video because I couldn't speak when the video needed to be recorded because my throat was burning. So yeah, this week there wasn't a video. But I mean, if you want to come up with a question, we can do that right now because that's how professional we are.
Nah.
Okay.
But do get registered on that. It's really simple app. The guys also do a podcast, a general football, mainly Premier League focused podcast as well. It's good stuff. John Sulaco's on there with Paul Schofield. Always some good chat on there, and they get fans on regularly. I was on a couple of weeks ago, enjoyed it immensely. And also getting involved in sponsoring things. They sponsored an event with Gazza this week, which looks very interesting. Looking forward to the content from that. So do check them out. Also, socials, get in touch with us. Instagram is at Back of the Nest CPFC, Twitter at Back of the Nest, Facebook Back of the Nest, YouTube Back of the Nest. You can always email us if you're, you know, in the future. That's hi@backofthenest.com. And don't forget the your podcast app reviews, iTunes podcast. What was it called? I've forgotten them all.
Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, and there's also another. There are some others that I've just completely
blanked Spotify. On.
Yeah, we're on Spotify. You're quite right. Yeah, but get reviewing 5 stars, please, because then that way people will pick up the show, and we'll get more listeners. And that's all we want from you. That's all we ever ask. And finally, as a couple of people have done this week, you can also get in touch and leave us some WhatsApp voice messages. Our contact number for WhatsApp is 0203 575 1266.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp 0203 575 1266.
Okay, breaks forward, he's got Ayew to his right, he's found Ayew with a chance, and it's in! The goalkeeper got a touch, but couldn't keep it out, and it's Jordan Ayew who's broken the deadlock with 20 minutes to go in front of those Palace supporters who've gone crazy, absolutely crazy. It's a lovely little ball fed through by Benteke, and Ayew did just enough. It was strapped by the goalkeeper, but he could not stop it from rolling over the line, and Palace lead at the Amex. Brighton nil, Crystal Palace 1.
Always love the commentary from BBC Sport. Absolutely incredible stuff, and beautifully captures the sort of the power of the emotion there. You can hear the Palace fans, us included, in the background going absolutely insane. Limbs, as they say, but you know, proper unforced limbs. It was just it was an incredible moment. I think the longest I've celebrated for quite some time, and just the screaming, I promise you, that's what did this to my voice. It's just ridiculous. But what a great moment. And yeah, we'll talk about that goal, how it came about and all the various different bits and pieces around it shortly. But let's take a little step back and talk a little bit about how we started that game. So understandably, Roy goes with the same lineup as Newcastle. Lucas only really fit for the bench. And obviously we found out a little bit later on that he didn't even have 45 minutes in the legs. So we saw Jairo Riedewald come on, which we'll talk about in just a sec. But just a question for the panel, really. Given that we played the exact same lineup as Newcastle, it's really notable that in that Newcastle game that we pressed high up the pitch very early on. We started with a real intensity, didn't give them a second of space. But in this game, it didn't really seem that way. So I'm wondering whether you feel that's because of the opposition or maybe a different approach from Roy Hodgson.
I think he saw me in the stands. I mean, I wasn't at the Newcastle game and he decided, let's go out and attack and have lots of shots on target. But then he saw me at Brighton away. He's like, all right, let's start it slow again. No, that's not the reason. But I think, as you said, it's a Brighton. It's Brighton away and we saw at home. I don't think it's, well, I can't really blame him because we got a result. But technically, I don't think we should have started like that. But it is understandable because the way that Brighton played. Brighton love keeping the ball. They have got pace up there with more pay. So Roy clearly sees that and he would rather just go sit back, let Brighton play about. And it did work out in a way because you saw it, Brighton were keeping the ball, but what were they? They did create chances, but they also had lots of misplaced passes, which I noticed. I don't know the official stats about it, but we forced them to do that by just sitting back. And I feel like Roy just wanted to keep it simple because we're away from home and the way that they play. And overall, it did work out well. But of course, I think some fans would have liked us to go at them a bit more. But who can you really moan if we get the results? I don't think so.
Whilst I think we were a lot more defensive-minded than we were against Newcastle, and it probably was because DR wasn't there. But if you look at the stats and if you look at the match of the day analysis from Shearer, we did actually defend a lot higher up the pitch, and we pressed Brighton a lot higher up the pitch because of the fact that they like to play it around the back was something they actually picked out on Match of the Day, and I think you could definitely tell we did press them higher, even though we were a little bit more defensive.
Yeah, I just think we certainly, you're right, a bit more defensive, a little bit more passive at times, but not to the degree that we've moaned about before. You know, this is not really a criticism, just an observation of a slight change of approach. But, you know, I do think, you know, as I hinted at when I was asking the question, really, that we have to take the opposition into account, and they do play possession-based football. And they do use the wings. It's interesting hearing Potter talk after the game about what he felt was the way to deal with Palace, in the fact that we're very narrow and we fill in that space. So they thought the best way to deal with that was to really get the ball wide and attack down the flanks. And they did that a lot. And as rightly observed, not always to a tremendous effect.
I mean, I feel that slow start is a little harsh, because the early chances, the Kouyaté one, for example, kind of fell to us. And it was a little while before Brighton started, you know, getting the shots in. I know that it was the most shots they had in any game in the Premier League this season, but they didn't start off creating that much. They just had a ton of possession, which I'm pretty sure that Hodgson would have been absolutely happy with. And it's hard to compare them in Newcastle, because Newcastle were absolutely bollocks.
Very, very, very true. No, it's a good point. And, you know, yes, you're right. Perhaps a slow start is a little harsh, but it wasn't a great first half. I think all of us said that at half time that, you know, I think me and Chris Clark spent probably most of the first half talking about anything other than football, as DR gave me stick for during the game.
Yeah, but I was just listening. And I was like, what on earth is going on? Am I at a bar? Am I watching? Like, oh, it's so confusing. But I don't blame you, because saying a slow start, I feel like when you look at their chances, Mike said they had some very good chances as well. I mean, the Solly March one, 9 times out of 10, it's harder to miss that. I don't know how he actually missed that. But I mean, on another day, if they took their chances, just like what happened at home in the first half when we faced them, absolutely dominated us. And I don't think it was the same when we faced them at their ground yesterday or the day before, depends on when you're listening. But they still did have the possession and they still did create chances. But as I said, I feel like our tactics helped us.
Yeah, look, the early chances. I mean, obviously we got a very, very early one, which Benteke did horribly with, which didn't look that bad from the stadium. But having seen it back, I think his foot seemed to have been put on incorrectly. And the Kouyaté chance just delayed that little bit too long and Ryan got out to smother it. But, you know, those were the sort of two clear-cut chances early on. And then it just settled into that rhythm, that routine of us. You know, a lot of the time we had all of our players in our own half. You know, and I think that built the sort of frustration. Because as you rightly talked about, the tension was there in the crowd. There wasn't a great atmosphere. Everyone's looking at each other and thinking, you know, this is Brighton away. Something more should be happening. And that was just our experience of that first half. And obviously we know how it turned out. And when you look back at it, given how it turned out, it feels like absolutely the right choice. And, you know, who am I to say any different?
Our expected goals were apparently slightly higher than theirs, which is incredible considering they had 24 shots. And I think a lot of the problems, their crowd being quiet, is probably the fact that they haven't really scored many goals. And the last thing they wanted was another game of not scoring or ruining the chances that they created. But I think that brings us nicely on to our man of the match poll. And I'll come on to why in a second. So someone kindly put on Twitter, I'm not sure which one of you it was, who was man of the match? Yeah, excellent. Dan, Benteke, Cahill or Morpie? And more than the Solly March miss, the fact that he stopped his own player from scoring was just absolutely incredible. I think didn't Glenn Murray, at Selhurst last season, managed to stop a goal with his arse as well. Like,
on the line.
They've obviously got previous for this. So, you know, it's great that they have all these chances and they just can't put them away. And hopefully that will mean that the other teams around them can keep getting points and they can bugger off back down to the Championship.
Absolutely right, as we kept saying to them after the game repeatedly in a variety of ways. But I put Morpay in there just for that reason. He missed so many chances just shooting straight at the keeper, but the block from Dunk was just beautiful, especially as they were already celebrating. And you know, of all the players you just don't want to score against us, it's obviously Lewis Dunk as well. So that was a truly beautiful moment in a game that had several. I want to talk a little bit about James McCarthy before we start getting into some general reviewing kind of stuff. These are my kind of key points at the top. So McCarthy went off at half-time with Gyro coming on. I just want your views, gents, on, first of all, how you felt McCarthy was playing, given that he's got the shirt over Luka at the moment. Unfortunate to get a slight pull on the hamstring. Apparently was keen to try it in the second half, but they didn't want to take a risk, so maybe not that serious. So I suppose, first of all, how do you think McCarthy got on in that first half? I haven't asked anyone in particular, so I'm just going to pick on Si.
I thought he was really solid, and the more I see of him, the more I like. I think he's getting back to match fitness, and we have to remember that he's not played for a very long time and for this number of games. But I love his sort of doggedness, his determination, his sort of evident passion. But I also think he's actually got a quality pass and a quality set piece on him. So I think if he carries on like this, he's been a right bargain.
I just want to talk about, now that we talked about McCarthy, I just want to talk about Jarrod Riederwood. I mean, he came on yesterday, and from what I saw at the stadium alone, I thought he had an absolutely fantastic performance in midfield, and that's where he should be playing in the future. Yes, he's done good at left back, and it helps that he can play left back, but with his technical abilities, he deserves that Luka role. And this might trigger some fans, but I don't think Luka should be starting after that Everton away game, because not just that game, but we've seen with Luka, he's had suspensions, he's had injuries, but every time he has returned, he hasn't still been the same Luka that we've had. And I was talking about this with you, Chris, going to the game, and you said, well, you look at the forward players and their runs, they could be better. Yeah, you have a point there. But with Jarrod Riederwood, you saw yesterday, he fitted in right in that role. And I feel like even if McCarthy's fit and even if Luka's fit, that should be Riederwood's spot, because this man, every time he comes in, he performs. And yet again, he still gets dropped for another player. And it's like, we're trying to lower the average age of the squad. He's only 23. And I'm not saying he's going to be the best player in the Premier League, but he's got massive potential. So why don't we invest our time in him? Because he's not a bad footballer. He's a good footballer and he actually deserves a role. So why don't we let him play? Because yesterday, another game where he showed what he's worth.
Yeah, great points there, DR. He comes into his own when we've got a sort of back to the wall type performance. Obviously, we always talk about the 0-0 Man City game. But more than that, the fact that he's now played several roles has got to endear him to Hodgson, because the first players he seems to love are the ones that he can stick in about seven different positions. So if Gyro becomes the new Jeffrey Schlupp, then he's going to be in the team in some position or other most games.
I think there's a couple of points I want to make on that. So first of all, starting with Gyro. I was reading on the BBS earlier and some posts on Twitter as well. A few people saying that he's one of those players that fans want to succeed. So they always overstate his worth and they always say he has a brilliant game when he has a decent game, and that we ignore the mistakes he made. And I watched some of the highlights back to try and spot some of that, because it wasn't overly evident at the ground. And I can see what they're talking about, where he's made some tackles, he's gone to ground quite early, and the rebounds have, unfortunately, one of them put, obviously, Morpay in for one of his misses. But I think, you know, for me, he is a class player. And it kind of does highlight, perhaps, you know, some agreement in terms of what you're saying, Dale, and what we were talking about before the game, because, you know, he creates options and angles for passes. He's got a very, very good range of passing on him, and he's so calm in possession that he doesn't seem rattled when he's trying to look for an option. Whereas at times, you know, all of the sort of regular three, if you like, or regular four, Kayate, two Mackers and Luka, sometimes seem to get a little bit caught in possession and can't find an option for a pass. But that kind of goes back to what I felt about the first half, and I tweeted it from the ground at half time, that our movement at times is very, very poor when we get possession of the ball. And part of that, I think, is because we've gone away from being that ultra speedy counter-attack inside under Roy. We still try to build attacks. We are capable of a counter-attack, particularly when we play direct to Benteke and get people in and around him. But it's a different kind of thing. We're not running with the ball for long periods of the game. We did much more of that in the second half when we got our confidence back, if you like. But so what I'm saying about Luka is, quite often I feel that because he drops deep in that screening role and he's often taking the ball off of the defence or on a very deep position, when he gets his head up and looks around for a pass, the passes are very, very few and far between. It tends to be move it out to the flanks. And if there's not movement after you make that initial pass, sometimes that ball just comes straight back to him and then they've cut off that angle and then he's got nothing. And I think he's really suffered from that ever since really Kabay left, to be honest. He always had that option of finding Johan Kabay, who could receive the ball in any position and not panic. And, you know, it kind of makes me think, I wonder how Luka would get on with Riedewald alongside him. But there you go. But yeah, I think we've covered a lot of ground on that one. A little bit on subs, because I'm trying to pick things that, you know, maybe had a little bit of tension around them. And I think, you know, half-time, obviously, Gyro came on. The only other sub we used was Cenk Tosun with 3 minutes plus injury time to go. A lot of people in the crowd weren't happy. And DR, I noticed you doing the wonderful sub gesture from the crowd, like Roy could see it. why do that? But anyway, apart from that, you thought, you know, we were sort of screaming out for a sub before the goal as well. So what did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Benteke's performance yesterday. It's a bit of a weird one, because some people are saying he's had a good performance. Some people are saying he could have done a bit better. But my where I stand on it, I feel like he did the basics, and that was pretty much it in front of goal. He wasn't that effective. And for that reason, I feel like as the game went on and on, you could see that he was tiring out a bit. And I just didn't understand the reason for keeping on Benteke for that long and not bringing on Tosun, because we saw what happened last game against Newcastle when Tosun came on. He might not be that clinical striker right now, but he has helped us defensively. And sometimes you just need a player out there with energy. And yeah, I mean, I thought that we should have made a substitution around the 75th or 80th minute mark, because you could see that certain players were getting tired, especially Benteke. It worked out in the end, but there will be a time which it will cost us, and we will end up actually blaming the player, whereas it's not really the player's fault. We need to make sure, we've talked about this before, game management. Just do the subs a bit earlier. That's it, Roy. That's the only real negative out of it, because another day it could have cost us, and it shouldn't have.
I have to disagree with DR on this one, because I thought Benteke was class. Apart from his you know, fact that he couldn't hit water, he fell out of a boat moment right at the beginning of the match, I thought his hold-up play, his link-up play with other players, and they kept referencing that throughout the game on the commentary, saying, okay, he hasn't got much in front of goal, but actually the importance to us of Benteke playing how he is in terms of building everything from him, I thought he was very strong yesterday.
Can we bring in a bit of listener contact on the subject of Tekkers then? So Lucy, formerly of this parish, just put Benteke, we're better with him in the team, discuss. And then Peter Windsor, is Big Ben reinventing himself as a number 10? And that's exactly what I was thinking during the game. Okay, he missed some absolute sitters and it was very annoying, but he was the pinnacle for getting balls up quickly on the counter-attack, holding up. Obviously, his ball through to IE for the goal was incredible. And he could well be a number 10, because there's no point in him having the ball in front of goal because he's not going to score. But he's doing the job of holding up the ball on counter-attacks, which seems to be very effective. On top of that, defensively yesterday, he was absolutely incredible. He just seemed to make me a lot more stressed, because they had a lot of corners, a lot of set pieces, and he was there next to Guaita, and he just did his job.
I think, so I mean, I don't go along with the whole number 10 argument, but I see what people are saying about him, his hold-up play, but I think he's always had that, apart from when he's been very, very low on confidence and we've not really used him in the right way. I think we were a little bit more direct, and similar against Newcastle as well. We worked much better in terms of trying to play a little bit more to his strengths. So get the ball up for him to, you know, to either head on or control the chest and try and bring other people into play. But the thing he added, because his confidence has lifted over the last couple of weeks, probably since getting the goal against Everton, really, is that, you know, you saw him turn and run with the ball and you know, take players on and be positive. You know, the movement is better than it was. His absolute worst, the movement just went to pieces and he wasn't in the right positions in the box. So nobody bothered to put the ball in the box for him. And obviously when the chances come, he's just not had consistent chances to kind of build any kind of rhythm. And he's still probably suffering with that if we're completely honest. But hold up play is excellent. The key for that is getting people in and around him. And it lifts people like Ayew and Zaha when they have someone like that on his game. And it makes a big difference. And I think, as well, you can't underestimate the effect of bringing in Cenk Tosun to push him for that place as well. And I think the two of them really need, for the rest of the season, battling out for that position at the top of the attack just bodes well for us. I really do think that.
I think in the future, now that Jordan Ayew has been scoring goals, but I want to see Jordan Ayew play more narrow and close to Benteke, because we've been talking about his hold-up play recently and how he's been good and he has been involved in other players. But imagine if Jordan Ayew was more narrow in the pitch and next to Benteke rather than out wide, and you had a player like Andros Townsend there, and you had basically a front three or four, however you want to see it, of Wilfried Zaha, Benteke, Ayew and Townsend. That sounds lethal to me, especially the way that Benteke is playing right now. I don't think he can be a number 10 because of his build. Like, I don't think he's got the abilities, but he's too slow for number 10, in my opinion. Not that he's a slow footballer, but it's just his footwork. I don't think he's got a number 10 style footwork. But in the future, I want to see that happen. Jordan Ayew playing closer to Benteke, because he can give the ball to him, as we've seen. And I feel like that, we could create more chances and possibly score even more goals.
I just wanted, while you're talking about Ayew, bring up the best tweet of the weekend, which was from the Ghanaian prince himself. And it simply said, "Great day at the seaside with my friends. Thank you for the amazing support." Now, how good is that?
That's amazing.
Listen to his interview afterwards, just smiling, happy. What a man. What a man.
I mean, he's you know, the turnaround in Ayew is incredible. Rightly revered, but it just shows the value of confidence, doesn't it? We talk about it a lot on this show. It's a regular theme, but it's so true that it's probably the most important thing in football if you want your team to be playing well, putting good runs together, and you know, all the little things that go on in a game, they're just better with a confident team. And you think as well how often Ayew, Benteke and Zaha have played together. It's not actually that often, and we're really seeing the value in a, you know, run of games for them together, and they're starting to build understanding. I mean, that you think even a month, 2 months ago, maybe the likelihood of Benteke picking the ball up, you know, moving through a couple of players, running at goal at pace, and then having the wherewithal to slide that ball in perfectly for Ayew. You just think there's no way that would have happened. But, you know, that little, 5 or 10% more positivity and belief, and those things start happening. And it's great that it happened against Brighton. It really is. And as I was, my last point really was what a difference a goal makes. And that was because of how I was feeling at half time, and how the, you know, in the second half before we scored it, we'd started to come under a little bit of pressure again. And you're kind of thinking we'll be lucky to get away with a 0-0 here, because we'd dropped so deep at one point. I think I turned to DR and said that, I don't want to say this too loudly, but whenever we drop this deep in a game, you know, a goal for the opposition is coming, and it's really coming. But we managed to get it. And the clouds lifted and ended up being a wonderful day. Anyway, so a little bit of reaction from us. Let's get some reaction from our WhatsApp voice messages. First up is Darren.
Evening, Back of the Nest. How are we doing? Darren here. Taking a while to reflect on the second half of the game. I thought we played very well. I thought we kept, to a certain point, some composure. I think we let it go a little bit, even there. We had some good opportunities. Benteke looks a bit more confident. I mean, the miss in the first half, he should have gone with his head, not his foot, but what can you do? But overall, to be fair, taking everything into consideration, 3 points is 3 points at this stage of the season. I'm not really too fussed how it comes. You know we're not going to get exciting football from Roy, and we know we're going to get the same old results. We're not going to get 5, 6, 7 goal thrillers, but we're going to get the points we need. And fingers crossed we can do something about it in the summer.
Well, I mean, first up, come on, Darren, mate, we beat Brighton. I think he sounded tired, or he was having to speak very, very quietly, because he was, you know, maybe recording that message somewhere he shouldn't have been. But some interesting points in there. Mike, you want to jump in, though? Go on.
Yeah, just on a similar subject of somebody that doesn't sound too impressed by it, AM Eagle said, "Don't get carried away. Newcastle and Brighton are very poor sides that offer little." So you can't please everyone, can you?
No. But I think, you know, Darren was mentioning some positive points in there as well. And he is absolutely right in the sense that, you know, we're basically 36 points now. Even Roy after the game was saying, you know, we're not, the way we are, the way we play, the players we have, we're not going to throw it away now. So, you know, it's Premier League football next season, more than likely. We can't say for definite until mathematically it's certain, but it'd be very hard for 10 games for the sides below us to overtake us, three sides to overtake us, that is. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of truth in what's said there, but, you know, you've got to also enjoy beating Brighton. And yes, Newcastle were very poor, but other than not being able to finish, Brighton weren't poor. And we played them very well. You know, we did restrict them to mostly chances further out. You know, they should have scored, you know, a couple of goals, if we're completely honest. But, you know, we had a couple of really important chances. Cahill headed down and it bounced over the bar. That looked like a certain goal. Obviously, Zaha hitting the post later on. So arguably, you could say we should have scored three. So, it doesn't really pan out that way. But, you know, there's a lot in there. Obviously, mentioned the Benteke miss, which we've talked about already. You know, definite an improvement in the second half. I think it's probably the key point from Darren. It was a better second half. We had moments where we weren't great, but in general, once that belief we've just talked about was there, it was a really good game to watch, which it certainly wasn't in the first half. So a little bit more analysis now before we get to the next clip. So I'll get into a bit more of the detail. Very, very clear that we were focusing on the left flank. We do that quite a lot anyway, but it was 58% of our attacking play went down the left side of the pitch. And Wilf wasn't always on the left. In fact, he started out on the right and him and IU exchanged positions a few times. But I want to jump to using the Who Scored website and look at the sort of average positions. It's really interesting to see the average positions of our front three were all on the left-hand side of the pitch. I think part of that is because Zaha and IU exchange positions quite a lot. So IU's position was kind of dragged across from the right-hand side. So it's a little bit of a false picture when you look at the image itself. But in general, it was, you know, even the central midfield drifted over there. And it we'll talk about the defensive problems that gave us. But from an attacking sense, it really did put that pressure on Brighton when we did get the ball, and just created that little bit of danger, that little bit of panic, and made them think a little bit about their shape. So it was a clear tactic and one we've seen before, but better executed in the second half without a doubt.
As much as I hate the sort of pundit loving with the way Brighton playing, it's been a bit sick provoking, to be honest, the last few months. But I have to admit, Montoya and Byrne on both the right and left defensive flanks played really, really well. And they actually managed, I thought, IU and Zaha's threat very, very well throughout most of the game. And, you know, I mean, Byrne particularly, he's like a 7-foot giant, but it can also run as quick as Zaha. It was ridiculous. But I thought we gave them a tough time, but they did, to be fair, a really good job.
I don't think it's a coincidence, in all honesty, that we played down the left-hand side. It's obvious tactics because you look at how we play, it's not really the midfielders that help us going forward. It's more the left-back or the right-back. And you look at our left-back, Patrick Van Aanholt, compared to our right-back, Joel Ward. I mean, both Jordan Ayew and Wilfried Zaha can do it in either flank, so that's not the problem. But can Joel Ward do it going forward as good as Patrick Van Aanholt? Not really. And we saw it yesterday. I mean, imagine if Joel Ward did go as much forward as Van Aanholt, then that would have been a scary experience, because even though he didn't, he still got exposed. So I think it made sense tactically to focus on the left-hand side because we had that Patrick Van Aanholt's pace and his abilities going forward. And like that, I think it helped improve our chances of creating more chances with also minimizing the risks of conceding a goal from the flanks, because Patrick Van Aanholt is a faster player than Joel Ward and he can recover. Whereas Joel Ward, I don't think Roy trusts him as much going forward and running back throughout 90 minutes of the game.
Give Hodgson credit. I think that Dan Byrne on their left-hand side in defence is a really excellent defender. Plus the fact I think he probably, for me, was their best player. I know Moy got man of the match, not just for them, but throughout both teams, which is ridiculous. But, you know, Dan Byrne was excellent. So it made sense to go down the other side because it was just a weaker flank.
I think, interestingly, it also shows, you know, the different approach, because I've talked a lot about when Zaha is double or triple marked, why aren't we trying to get a few more bodies over on the other flank and taking advantage of that space? But, you know, it shows that you can do that, taking advantage a different way by getting more numbers on the left. And that's really what we did so well. And absolute credit to Roy for that, because, you know, they've noticed, you know, it's just basically given Zaha some help. He found space in this game because they couldn't double and triple mark him, or if they did, we had two or three players around him to take advantage of it. And that's the other way to go than chucking some more players out on the right and switching play. And it worked extremely well, so I've got to hold my hands up there and say well done to the manager and staff.
If we get a new right back in the summer, honestly, I feel like next season we'll score more goals. It sounds crazy, but we saw with Andrew Townsend this season, Wan-Bissaka left and he had something going forward. He had that pace. I know that he's one in a million. We're not going to get someone like that from the academy. But if we get someone, even like Van Aanholt, who on his day he can defend, but majority of the times is better attacker rather than defender. Even if we get someone like that, we saw this season with Andrew Townsend, he's pretty much out of the picture right now, which is crazy after you're judging his previous couple of seasons. You never would have really thought that. But I feel like the fullbacks are so, so significant in Roy's system that when you have someone like Joel Wood, and this is not criticism for Joel Wood because we shouldn't put him in this position in the first place. He can't go forward and offer something up front and also track back. That's just not him. He's just a defender. At this day and age, in the Premier League, he's just a defender rather than a fullback. And I feel like that's why it's so important that in summer, even though we should have got it before, but I'm not going to go into that topic. In the summer, it's so, so important that we get a right back, even if it's Nathan Ferguson, who can do both, we will create more chances and score more goals, trust me.
No, I think it'll definitely give a better balance to the side and more threat down that side as well. I think it's a good chance to talk about Joel Ward and one of the more interesting sort of tactical battles on the pitch. And so first up, it's worth saying that Joel Ward was much, much better in the second half and got better protection and you know, by the end of the game, I think it was a solid performance. But first half, he was so regularly caught out of position, and Scott Dan was livid with him so often. Was it you, Mike, who observed him shout to Wardy that, you know, you're the fucking right back, not me?
Yeah, he definitely did say that. Yeah, I'm no lip reader, but...
Yeah. But what I was trying to work out why it was, because he kept getting caught out. And it's a really simple tactic. So, you know, you had Morpay up top and Trossard was just playing off of him. And one or both of them kept drifting out left. And their sort of wide left player, if you like, that Wardy was getting close to. There is a wing back, really, isn't he, I suppose. So Wardy would get caught way up on the halfway line, marking his man, if you like. And then there's a huge gap behind him. And they just kept running into that gap and playing long balls into it. And, you know, they got in down that side a couple of times and it exposed Joel Ward. And I think he tried to react by sort of following different players and quite often ended up in centre-back position with Dan out wide right. And it was causing a lot of tension between the two. But it was something that was definitely dealt with at half-time. And we sort of negated that threat by getting closer in to the people in possession, but just getting more numbers in and around there and the midfield doing a slightly better job of protecting Wardy. But he, you know, if you could have taken him off after 10 minutes, you probably would have done, because he was getting run ragged that much. But obviously we had no options on the bench for a right back. But I think credit really must go to the fact that he can have a half like that and come out and just do a much better job without it. It's not affected him in any way. Didn't, you know, affect his confidence and belief and his attitude to the game. And that's what shines through with Joel Ward, our longest serving player and an absolute credit. And, you know, it's to his credit that we haven't missed Wan-Bissaka quite as much as I thought we were going to, although we certainly miss him getting forward. But so shout out to Wardy for that there. It's definitely time for a little bit more Jordan Ayew, love. And this is something that Terence from the preview show chucked our way. So this is a Premier League stat. Jordan Ayew's goals this season have won Crystal Palace 12 points. Only Andy Johnson in 2004-2005, which was 15 points, won more in a single Premier League season for the Eagles. And obviously 10 games still to go, Ayew could very much overtake that. So not only is he scoring decent numbers in terms of goals, 7 for a striker in our system is pretty good. And it, you know, Roy quite rightly called it a large percentage of our goals, which it is. But he's scoring goals in important times, in important matches. And this goal has to go down as the one that will secure him as a legend. He was a legend in many people's eyes already for what he's done, but a winner away to Brighton. It's just a fitting tribute for the hard work that he's done this season and the status he now enjoys as a Palace player.
An extra credit to him in the post-match interview. He just said, you know, Christian did everything. I just finished it. And in fairness, the keeper probably should have done better. But it's a habit that he keeps doing. So whether it was lucky, whether it is poor goalkeeping, the fact that he keeps doing it, and he's got 7, even though he's been playing out on the wing. I mean, it's not just luck. That was an amazing move.
He was excellent from start to finish. His defensive abilities, his ability to, the ball just sticks to his legs and his feet. It's just unbelievable. But I, you know, you can't believe that. I was there on, I think it was the 2nd of January last year, singing, "We were there when IU scored at Wolves," because we thought he'd never score again. And you just can never imagine that he'd be the legend that he is now after singing that at Molineux that night. But he's just, he's quickly going up my sort of table as one of my favourite players.
So, according to the Premier League, they tweeted this out, Jordan Ayew's goals this season have won Palace 12 points.
If you just said the thing that I read out earlier, like literally to start this conversation, is that how little you listen to me?
Maybe. But here's my point. So 12 points. And right now we're sitting on 36 points. So minus 12, that results in 24. And currently in the Premier League, where we'd be right now is below Aston Villa, who are 19th and in relegation zone. Now, I mean, someone else might have scored them goals, you might say. Some of the chances that he had, fair enough. But how I see it, Jordan Ayew this season, as good as Vicente Gaita has been in goal, he has been as good or even better going forward. Without Jordan Ayew this season, God knows where it would be. I mean, go on.
No, I was just about to agree with you, and absolutely right. It just emphasises just how vital those goals have been. And, you know, you're quite right in saying, well, you know, it's a what-if thing, isn't it? Because if he doesn't score, maybe someone else does.
But he's had some... It's not only tap-ins, though. That's the thing. He's got some very good goals. That's why I don't think it's easy as saying, oh, someone else would have got him goals. He's got some very good goals. And at 2.5 million or 3.5 million, whatever it is, could potentially save us £100 million. I mean...
No, it's...
You have to look at it like that. Look at a bigger picture. That's how I'm looking at it like this. And this season, I don't know who I'd vote for at this current stage for player of the year, honestly.
No, I can't agree with you more. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with the importance of Ayew and how well he's played this season. Undoubtedly, he's going to be up there in the player of the year votes, certainly along with Guaita and one or two others as well. But, you know, I think he can even get better as well. Was he 28, something like that? I think there's more to come from him as that confidence continues to build. And, you know, Sai, you talked about the ball sticking to his feet. I mean, you said legs originally, which is a weird image, but certainly right that you corrected it to feet. And but it is that level of skill, that level of technique that you know, the hard work was always there, but that seems to have come on leaps and bounds. I think it's always been there with him. He's that talented a player, but he seems settled and happy. And this, you know, sometimes we see it a lot, don't we, at Palace? We have players that join us where it's just the absolute right club for them. And if they go somewhere else, they never quite do any better, or, you know, they're never going to reach the heights that they reach with us. And I think Jordan Ayew is just the perfect type of player for Crystal Palace. It just fits everything that we do. To have that work ethic, which always will win over Palace fans. And I think we're not unique in that sense, but it's very much a trait of our fan base, and particularly with forward players, ever since, you know, AJ came on the scene, and just through continuously running at a ridiculous pace and you know, no lack of skill either, but the hard work that he put in, it just set the tone for what we love as a forward player in this kind of modern era. And Ayew just does that he's you know, he's brilliant for us, and it's so, I'm so happy that he made that turnaround as well. And you know, as for the price that we got him for, it seems ridiculous now. At the time, there were obviously a few people thinking it was a waste of money and a waste of a squad place and a waste of wages. Those people obviously will be delighted as well. I'm sure that is an incorrect statement. Anyway, let's hear from another listener. This one is Ebo.
Hey, back in the nest. Ebo here. Just finished watching the Palace-Brighton match. That was a difficult one. Performance-wise, we weren't great. Again, very deep in midfield, really let Brighton get at us a lot. And I think they had the better, obviously, of the possession. And at the start, certainly had the better of the chances. Benteke early miss, but then I think they missed a couple of absolute sitters as well. So it sort of evened itself out. Second half, they were all over us from the off. But then, I don't know, a great ball forward. Benteke picks it up, drags three defenders into the centre of the box with him, and then lays off a lovely pass to IU, who's wasn't the greatest finish, but, you know, took his chance and scored. God, we could have gone on to win that by two or three. I mean, a chance at the end there where Tosson sets up. Wilf should have just... I don't know what he was trying to do it with the outside of his boot, but didn't really matter in the end. 1-0, clean sheet, a win. But the disappointing thing was just the big hole in midfield again. The midfield was not getting forward. I mean, a lot of that was down to the fact that we were a bit worried about Brighton. It's on the break. You know, we weren't going to have the easy day of it like we did against Newcastle last week. But oh well, 1-0, happy days. Come on, you Eagles.
And Ebo has done a wonderful job there of wrapping up all the last talking points that I had. So cheers for doing that, mate. Time was marching on, so that makes it a lot easier as well. Obviously, a lot we touched on there, and absolutely right. I mean, yeah, okay, we could talk all day about the midfield, which, again, I think the midfield was good, but it is noticeable that, you know, the opportunities to get forward, shall we say, weren't there that often. But as he says... didn't matter in the end. Happy days, two wins in a row, beat Brighton at their own ground. Can't say fairer than that. Two very, very quick points of discussion from me before we move on. First up, I just want to, just an observation really, and guys obviously chip in if you've got any comments on this, but a lot of attention on refereeing and VAR. Nothing to speak of in my view this week. Nothing at all. And it felt really good. I mean, I'm sure there were a couple of VAR checks, but I didn't really notice them. I didn't have any real problems with anything that the referee did. Yeah, okay, I think there was one that was given a corner that shouldn't have been, but it was nice not to be focusing on that for once, I think.
It felt to me like Brighton had done something similar to Newcastle and were trying to rotate the fouls. And he did a sterling effort of you know, trying to keep 22 men on the pitch, but... the only thing that got to me was I do feel that a few more of the Brighton players should have been booked. Some of the treatment of Wilf was ridiculous, and it stunned me that it was the Bellends, the sub that they had, that actually was the first one to get booked, because you know, they come in with some pretty ferocious tackling, and it's no real wonder that he got angry.
I guess that's what happens, Hambo, when you talk to Chris Clark for 45 minutes at a game and not actually follow the game itself. You forget about the referee. That might be a solution for it. But yeah, overall, considering that it was a derby, I think it was Martin Atkinson that was refereeing the game. He seemed like a nice gentleman. And yeah, why are you laughing today? Yeah, he seemed like he's a nice person. Like, not only from this game, he just seems like a calm guy, you know. He doesn't have an ego. So he's one of the better refs. And yeah, I thought he handled it well. And unlike some of the games that we saw today in the Premier League, like the Everton game against United. So thankfully, we were lucky with that one.
Did you forget that it was Martin Atkinson that booked Will for being fouled earlier on in the season and booked him for diving when he didn't dive? Have you forgotten those?
Wait, was that Arsenal?
Arsenal and Watford. Let's not get focused on that. Yeah. I was giving him some praise, but I still hate him. So there you go.
He's a gentleman still.
He's still a gentleman, is he? Nice, calm gentleman, as you put it.
As a ref.
Interesting comment. So I suppose let's talk about the Zaha Skeletto incident before we move on as well. We've kind of hinted at it, talked about it a little bit, but you know, the first thing I want to address, I suppose, is the, you know, people accusing Zaha of spitting. Now, he did spit, like a lot of footballers do. So first of all, you got people claiming he was spitting at the player, which he wasn't. He was, you know, and it was, he was spitting in the direction of the crowd. Well, yeah, there was the crowd were in that direction, and it was at a point where they were giving him stick, but I don't really understand what they're talking about. You know, apparently it's a red card offence to spit on the floor near a crowd that's abusing you. So, yeah, don't really understand that. And as for the incident itself, you know, they're hero worshipping him. It's, I mean, I suppose it's just all part of the fun, isn't it? Part of the, I don't see it as a major thing. It was funny that he got booked. Probably shouldn't have been, and I wouldn't have been surprised if Zaha had been booked as well, to be honest with you. But he wasn't. But, and that's all I really think about it. It's nothing really. It's part of the passion of a derby game.
If a 40-something gammon wants to say he spat because whoever said it has never run in their lives and realised you have to spit when you've lost your breath. I mean, the only thing that bothered me about spitting yesterday was when we were all waiting for a train. We'd been kettled off. All the Palace fans were waiting for a train, and there was a Brighton fan spitting on us from above. He got cuffed and took away by three policemen. That's the main spitting incident I remember. And he deserved everything that he gets. Hopefully, he got more than what we saw. The only other thing I want to bring up from what people have said about Zaha, Keith Powell this morning said, another poor performance from Zaha. It's a regular thing now. His value must be dropping. I'm not sure. I was watching the same game as you, Keith. Sorry, I don't get it. He missed that chance and hit the post, but I think that was mainly Tosin's fault for knocking him the ball too far. I thought it was harder than Solly March's chance. Other than that, I thought he was amazing.
He's not the only one, though. I've seen that on Twitter after the game. There have been people saying Zaha wasn't really at it. And thinking about it, I mean, it's a bit of a weird one. Of course, I feel like he could have done better, but the circumstances don't help him as well, really. The fact that there's other distractions, which he needs to get over, that substitute, as much as, you know, as funny it is, he shouldn't really let things like that bother him. But I feel like people are, because it's against Brighton and they hate him so much, I feel like Brighton fans and even Palace fans are expecting much more from him in terms of contribution, creating more chances and stuff. But if you actually look at the way that we play, we can't really create chances because everyone pretty much has a lack of limited role going forward. So I feel like that contributed. But yeah, I wouldn't say that he had a particularly great game, maybe average at best.
I thought he got better as the abuse from the crowd grew, and that often is the case. And Martin Keown, I mentioned him again, I'm not obsessed with him, but he did say actually he tends to get better when there is more abuse directed towards him. You can't doubt his passion for being at the club, though, when you saw him celebrate when we scored that goal, and you could hear him on the TV in terms of what he was saying to the home family, which is quite amusing. But no, I think he had a decent enough game. But again, there's always two or three players on him, so it's always difficult for him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I totally agree about the passion of him screaming at them, what, at the fan. I love that. But, you know, he, of all the players, they all understand that that's a rivalry. But, you know, Wilf is one of those players who really gets it. You know, because of the hate that he gets, you know it's returned. And he loves nothing more than us beating Brighton, and he loves nothing more than it being down to him as well. I mean, look, to go back and address Keith's point, I think it just comes down to expectation again, doesn't it? You know, Wilf sets a very, very high line in terms of what he's capable of. But as you've kind of said, there's so many variables in how the game will go for him, because, you know, after he's been around that long now, that every club has a long list of things that they know that they can do that will nullify him. So obviously multiple people marking him, rotational fouling, winding him up, you know, even from the sidelines, it seems that's now acceptable. And, you know, the home crowd or the away crowd, depending where we're playing, also know that, you know, sometimes if they can get on his back, it will make him emotional either angry or, you know, lose a bit of focus, and that can affect his play as well. But he's just a sensational footballer, and we are a weaker team with him not in it, almost no matter how he's playing. I don't think that we can do a lot else. You know, we play through him all the time, just all the time. So the expectations there for him to beat several players just consistently throughout the course of a game. And, you know, anyone who, if you want, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, be offensive or anything like that. You know, and I know Keith a little bit, and, you know, he's watched more games than probably all of us put together. He knows his stuff, and it'll just be down to, again, Keith's expectation of what he knows that Wilfried is capable of. But I think you know, it's just one variable form. You know, there's so many more to it. And for me, Wilf is undroppable, just undroppable.
I just want to add to that. If we go back to the Benteke thing, I think because we played through Benteke so much yesterday, it brought out more in Zaha, because he wasn't expected to do something out of nowhere. You know, Benteke had already held the ball up to the point where Zaha had more space than usual. So if that's a deliberate tactic and it continues, I think he's going to have a decent last 10 games.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And it's a little bit of Q&A time. We've taken some of your questions as we've gone through your review, but there's a few more left. So over to you, Mike.
As ever, we had plenty of feedback, so thank you very much. We read them all, we comment on them all, and we add in as many as we possibly can. So Sacadinho has said, does Gyro now deserve a run in the team in midfield? I think we've discussed that enough, and the answer from DR was a big old yes. So I'm sure we'll get into that more if he gets another chance. But let's go to a Red and Blue Dave. After yesterday, is Cahill the man for the captaincy full-time? What do you think?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because, I mean, you don't really change club captain through the course of a season. It's very rare unless, like, a new manager comes in or there's some kind of a disciplinary issue or something like that. I think the natural way that would happen, and I believe Tompkins is actually vice-captain as well, so if he's playing. So you'd have to have Luca and Tompkins not playing either through injury or form, and Cahill will be the captain. But in answer to the question, personally, no, because I think sometimes the armband gets overstated because, you know, many footballers we've interviewed on this show in its various incarnations will all tell you that, yes, there's a captain, but there's leaders throughout the dressing room. So, you know, Gary Cahill will be another captain no matter what. He's not going to think, oh, Luca's a captain, I better not say anything. He's going to say his piece. He's going to motivate the players around him. And the more leaders you have, the better. So for me, I don't think it's that big of an issue because I don't think the armband is that important in the context of what you see out on the pitch. And I think from what all the players say, Luca's a very good club captain in terms of everything that goes on away from the pitch. So I don't think it's that big of an issue personally. I'm not sure if anyone else thinks anything else.
He's a natural leader. Yeah, that's all that matters. You can see it on the pitch. He's vocal. Other players listen to him. They have respect. I don't think captaincy really needs to be changed. I think it can cause more of a stir. There's no need for it. Cahill's doing his job well. He doesn't need an armband to continue doing it. He's just a natural leader.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have thought Cahill could give a toss whether he's the captain or not. As you say, it might rock the boat a bit if Luca found out that he wasn't. So let's go on to Sam Winner. Sorry if I've pronounced your name wrong, Sam. We've barely mentioned him today, despite the fact that he was apparently player of the game on Who Scored. Felt Guaita had another outstanding game and ever so reliable. Should he be leading the player of the year this season for us, or should it be IU? What do you think?
Well, DR's already mentioned it, so why don't you just revisit that for us, DR? You've talked about your choice. Yeah. Is it just those two?
Yeah, it is those two for this season, if we're looking at player of the year. I said that I can't really make a decision, but I mean, 20 minutes later, I think I can slightly. If I have to pick right now and I have to pick one player out of them two, because I do think it's only them two, I think it has to...
I think you were confident.
Yeah, exactly. I was so confident until I was like, am I going to do it? I think it has to be Vicente, but then when I say that, I'm like, Jordan Ayew's goals have legit saved us from relegation, but Vicente saves have saved us. It's so hard, but I'm just going to give it Vicente just by 0.1%. That's how tight it is.
Yeah, I have to agree with DR. There is no other choice for me other than Vicente. He has been, without a doubt, player of the season, consistent, and has saved us. And actually, I think generally, if it wasn't for him, we probably would have been relegated.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's just emphasised something that we talked about a lot on this show, and various people got upset about it at times. But it just shows the value of that extra bit of class in the, you know, in the goalkeeping position. You know, obviously, I'm referring to Hennessy. And you know, for all that's gone on with Hennessy, he's a decent keeper, you know, an international keeper. But when you look at the level of save that Guaita pulls off on a regular basis and the confidence that he exudes with the team, that's that little step up. You've got perfectly competent, good players. But when you're talking about trying to move up the league and go on to that next level, having a next level player who's just got that little bit of extra, that little bit of... Oh, I nearly said, well, I'm going to have to say X factor now. It's the only thing I can think of. But do you know what I mean? It's like he has that bit extra that we were missing in terms of the goalkeeper position since, you know, obviously Jules up and left. And, you know, let's face it, Jules is an absolute legend. But, you know, I think if you're talking about a Premier League quality goalkeeper, you've got to say Guaita's probably a better keeper than Jules. Did I just say that out loud? I did.
Ooh.
Let's see if anyone argues with me. But
I'm not. You know, I'm not here for arguments. It's a good day.
Exactly right. All right.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that there. The only other thing I wanted to say about Guaita was there was someone singing the Guaita song yesterday to the wrong melody, which was one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life. So let's just finish the feedback from people with Charles Meyer. Now that we've have almost certainly achieved survival, Hodgson said as much, with that victory, do you think Roy should start playing Meyer in Townsend in an effort to really go for victories and perhaps push up the table?
I don't think he will. But I do think that there will be a chance that he will slightly sort of take the shackles off. He won't, I promise you, I don't, and I think he's right as well, to not do it until there's a bit of a higher degree of certainty. But I think over the coming weeks and, you know, maybe, you know, in some of the games that are a bit more of a free hit later on, I think we might see a little bit of change of ambition and possibly rotation of the squad, giving people an opportunity to, you know, being cynical about it at times, maybe putting a couple of players in the shop window as well. You know, I think Tosin will get some more minutes for sure. And you know, probably Max will get a bit of game time and I hope Andros as well, but you know, and that's what you need to do. But I don't think it will come now. I think, you know, if we pick up another win, then I think Roy will take those shackles off, and he's shown us that he will do that before. You know, if you go back to the Bournemouth game, and what an incredible game that was at the end of last season. I don't think he necessarily enjoyed it, but I think he's much more relaxed and able to do that. But I guess he's also an old school manager who will respect the competition as well. So we'll see.
I have to agree with Chris. And I think, you know, Hodgson's got one aim in his mind, and that's to get to the safety line. And we saw it last year, and I think we'll see it again once we've got to that point. I think he will play a lot more of a less restrictive and more expansive outlook on games. So we'd have to wait till we get to that point. But he's shown he can do it before, and I think he'll do it again.
Okay, so let's just round up with some final chat about, well, I suppose we'll call them events at the game. That's what Mike's titled it in the topics. Before I do, just a quick reminder, check out our sponsor, Pitch Sport Football. Go to their website, download the app, get involved on that. So there's all sorts going on as they're ramping up their launch. And do check out their podcast as well. It's some great content. And as I say, John Solarco's a regular on there, and he loves a bit of Palace chat as well, which is so you can contact the guys and get in touch with them and start making your own contributions to what they do as well. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy it. But we can't really go talk about the day and the game events without a quick chat about Chris Clark. So we put a poll up, which disappointed me, and we'll get to the result of that in a second. But so after the game, we obviously you get kept in, as any of you will know, who go away regularly, particularly at games against your rivals. So we got kept in, was it something like 25 minutes or something like that? And they carry on serving at the bar. So after a little while, crowd starts dispersing. We start walking up, and there's a pretty hefty queue. So we turn around and head back to the bar. But unfortunately, the bar's closing, isn't it, Mike? The bar's just closing. And then calm, respectful young man, Chris Clark, he gets a beer rage, a proper beer rage. He's rowing with the supervisor at the bar. He can't get his drink, and he's absolutely livid. And I promise you, he couldn't calm down. And it's one of those things, I'm not very helpful in those situations because I find it really funny, and I kept winding him up. But incredibly, and I think Luke Chester put the poll out for us. Cheers, Luke. Shout out to Luke. But incredibly, you backed him for being angry, because they closed the bar 38 seconds early. And you out there in listener world backed Chris Clark. It's incredible, Mike. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised by the result. But let's put it in context. Him and Luke got the chain down and had three cans of whatever horrible lemon-infused IPA that they drink. We then met in Wetherspoons in North Street to get some breakfast. We had a couple more there. Then we'd had a couple at the ground. So it wasn't like he was thirsty. And we were about to go off to Brighton to do some more drinking. So I do feel it was a slight overreaction, but unsurprisingly, it was 60-odd% of people reckoned that he wasn't being out of order.
I think I found it that funny because we'd just beaten Brighton and he was red with rage. He's just like, come on, mate. You know?
How did I miss this?
I know, you'd already scarpered off to get your train. But yeah, oh dear. I promise you, he's still angry now. But it was incredible scenes. But yeah, well done, Chris, for a hugely amusing moment on our day out. So we've talked about the atmosphere and the nerves and all that kind of stuff earlier on. But let's have a little chat about what I've determined is called Flaregate. And this just sums up the kind of support that Brighton are. So, you know, a smoke bomb goes off. There was also one of those flares that sort of sparks all the lights and stuff like that. And, you know, and Brighton fans are absolutely up in arms about it. So, you know, first of all, they let flares off at Selhurst the last couple of times they visited. So apparently it's all right for them, but not for us. Apparently our supporters are human garbage for letting off. But, you know, it's a football match. Why are people trying to sanitize football? You know, I don't want to go down too deep a route here, but you know, there's a culture in football, and you should try to protect that. And you know, otherwise it doesn't carry on being football. It doesn't carry on being the game that it is for the people that it's for. And to see them up in arms about it, I mean, yeah, okay, it's laughable, and you can read their comments and laugh at them, but it actually makes me sad. You know, even though I hate them all because they're Brighton fans, it makes me sad that they go to a football match and they think like that. And they actually think that they're right. And they actually think that you know, an atmosphere and visuals and, you know, a proper derby game, that's wrong. It baffles me.
This is the same people that sing "We're All Having a Party" when Wilfried Zaha dies. So slight double standard, but yeah, from my point of view, Amazing support, ridiculous limbs when we scored, and huge props to the HF because, you know, they led the singing in a not particularly acoustically easy ground to have a tune sung right around. I think we did a great job.
As a man who just went to Fenerbahce versus Galatasaray game, seeing Brighton fans complain about flares is just hilarious. When if we had the same treatment as Galatasaray at that game, right, we would have had speakers in front of us so that the home team can't hear us. We would have been kept in the stadium for a good 2-3 hours and they would have shut the light at us when it was dark. But yeah, if a flare is a problem. If it's a flare, jeez, you acted like we threw flares at like at Brighton fans. Nothing happened. Like it's crazy. It's just crazy. Just listening to people complain about flares as a fan who has watched Turkish football before. I don't know. The culture is of course different, but it hasn't harmed anyone. It's not like no one died or anyone got coronavirus from a flare. It doesn't spread virus. It's just smoke.
Yeah, I mean, everything's on fire in Turkish football all the time, isn't it? So it's not, it's a totally different thing. I just said, you know, a Turkish football match, pretty much everything's on fire all the time. It's fine.
Nah, it's not as bad as it was back in the day. It's better,
back in the day. How old are you? Come on, mate.
I've been going to see Fenerbahce for a good like 10 plus years now, so.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah, okay. Good stuff. Anyway, and you made them lose for the first time in how many years?
And I'm banned as well, once again, apparently.
Are you?
Yeah, because you need a special card and you get banned.
Wow. Well, there you go. Rebel you are.
No.
So that'll do, I think, in terms of the events. Mike, did you make a quiz this week?
I did, and it's to mark the fact that Hodgson just had his 100th Premier League game as a Palace manager.
Oh, fuck it. Let's do a quiz then.
Hodgson themed, yeah. It's going to be a little bit harder because there's three of you. I didn't think about that, but, you know, we'll give it a go. So, yeah, 100. I mean, it's not his 100th game. It's his 100th Premier League game. And that's mostly come from the fact that the Premier League like to think that they're the only important competition. It's actually his 113th, I think, but let's ignore that for a minute. So, in his time as manager, the side have only lost by 4 goals or more on 3 occasions. So can you remember what those 3 games were? Who they were against?
Man City.
Open that to everyone.
DR said Man City. I'm going to say Man United.
Man
United. Sorry, you even put your hand up, but I didn't wait.
Have we lost?
So, sorry, you need the third one.
4 goals or more. Fuck off.
Under Hodgson, that's weird.
Who was it?
It was this season, and it was Spurs.
Oh yeah,
we put it out of our mind. But interestingly, the two that you named, United and City, were in the first 3 games he was in charge. So in the last 97 games, he's only conceded 4, lost by 4 on 1 occasion, which is
Hodgson for England.
So it's a simple question. See who gets closest to it. Out of his 100 league games in charge, how many of those have been victories?
Okay, I'll start, and I'm going to go with 34.
Ooh. Okay, Dio?
32.
I think me and Chris are related because I was going to say 34 as well. I'm going to go for 36.
You should have stuck with 34. Dead on.
Really? Dead on. I'm impressed with myself.
Yeah. And this is an interesting stat as well. Out of those 100 games, how many of them were clean sheets?
99. I'm joking.
Wow. Should we do it in the same order or do you want to go different order? I mean, that's sweet.
You go first.
Do I have to go first? How many were clean sheets in 100 games? I'm going to go with 34.
39.
30.
See, what you've all done here is you've buggered it up because I was really impressed that it's 29 games out of 100 that he's kept a clean sheet and you've totally ruined it by all guessing a higher number than that. But yes, 29 of the games he managed to keep a clean sheet, which is pretty damn impressive. I think especially when he inherited a side that had, were hemorrhaging goals. The last question. So him and Dougie Friedman have almost identical win ratios across all competitions, 35.5, so marginally higher than his Premier League record. But just tell me whether these managers have a higher or lower win rate. So first of all, Big Sam.
Higher.
I'm going to go higher as well.
Okay.
Roughly how much do you think higher? Do you want to guess 38. A number on what percentage his win rate was? Yeah, pretty much 37.5. So marginally higher, although obviously a lot less games because he just decided to up and fuck off from the club. So Tony Pulis, higher or lower?
Lower.
You've gone higher, Si, have you?
Yeah. Because
I think you're probably, oh, it's going to be tight now. It's going to be tight because I reckon maybe the Brighton game has just tipped him over.
Expectations have changed. Remember, under Pulis, we probably got the points, but it's wins, actually. Yeah.
No, he got a fair few wins as well. I'm going to go higher.
I'm going lower.
Well, it's higher. It's considerably higher, and it's the highest percentage win rate out of managers that have been there for a while in a long time. 42.86% will win.
There you go.
But again, on you know, a much higher amount. Ian Holloway.
Lower.
Yeah, lower.
Lower.
Yeah, he ruined it. He's three points out of the first 10 games in the Premier League season. Obviously, he was still an amazing manager for us. Got us up, but only 30.43. And finally, perhaps the most difficult one, Ian Dowie.
Oh, now, I think fractionally higher.
Yeah, same.
Higher.
Yeah, in fact, quite considerably higher, 40.65.
Oh, you're right. No, you did have a good stuff. Yeah.
Impressive stuff for me and David. So that is my quiz of the week, Hodgson thing.
Oh, well done. And well done for coping with the extra people, person, whatever.
Well, I was crap.
Yeah, well, you know.
We didn't really keep track of scores or anything. You just freestyle.
We had to rattle through that pretty quickly. And Mike did a really
it's
good
about
job.
The taking part anyway.
Yeah, at least we tried.
Well, I hope you did well at home. And yeah, let us know. Well, let Mike specifically know.
Tweet us, backofthenest.com.
You said tweet us, backofthenest.com, did you?
Yeah, I sound like you.
That doesn't make any sense, does it? Anyway, I think that is a surefire signal. It's time to end the show and let Sam get on with attempting to edit what the hell we've done. Thank you very much indeed to Sam for producing, Mike, Si, and DR for being the panel. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check out Love Sport. I assume it's still happening. Is it Wednesday 8 or not?
Yes, I believe so.
And so you do check that out. And of course, the preview show will be following later in the week as well. Download, subscribe, rate 5 stars, all those things. Thank you very much to everyone who got in touch and all that kind of business throughout the course of the week. And we'll be back again soon. Cheerio. It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.